So hard, my bass and fun.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
D-Montaigne.
Read
so hard,
you use a Kindle? I carry spines, supporting bookshelves like a bra. Calvin Klein.
Hi, you're listening to Drunk Booksellers. My name is Kim.
And I'm Emma.
And we're professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers. This episode is sponsored by Books and Whatnot, a newsletter for booksellers. Sign up and receive marketing tips, book reviews, interviews, and more directly to your inbox. Go to booksandwhatnot.com to sign up or learn more. And if you like email newsletters, great news! Drunk Booksellers now has a newsletter that will deliver our show notes directly to your inbox when a new episode lands. Our show notes outline the episode, but more importantly, we list every single book we mention. And there are a lot, it can be hard to follow. But now you don't have to. You can just look it up on our show notes. Whenever possible, we link back to the bookstore we're hosting so you can purchase the books directly from them as well. We also use a lot of GIFs and make a lot of jokes. If you like our podcast, we promise you'll like our show notes. You can check out our previous show notes at libsyn.com/drunkbooksellers, and you can sign up for the newsletter there. You can also sign up by going to our Twitter profile. Today we're interviewing Bea and Leah from The Rip Bodice, which is the only exclusively romance bookstore in the United States.
What are we drinking tonight?
Tonight we are drinking French 75s, which is one of my most favorite drinks. It is vodka, champagne, lemon juice, and sugar, and it is delicious.
It's very classy.
I feel super fancy when I drink it.
Yeah. I like ordering champagne cocktails at bars, because I'm that kind of person.
Real talk, I've got like Andre's champagne in mine, so I feel a little less classy than I should feel, but I still feel pretty classy.
I sometimes like to make it with Prosecco, but I think my boyfriend pointed out that then it's no longer French 75 as Prosecco's Italian.
I don't think Andre's is French either, so
mine's
cheap American 75.
I'll
brand that, yeah.
I like it.
So, Bea and Leah, what are you guys reading right now?
I just started a new book, but I cannot for the life of me remember the name. It's also an upcoming book, so maybe it's not the best thing to talk about.
Yeah, you do you.
It's Andrea Penrose's mystery. I'm so excited because Andrea was my teacher at Yale, and she taught me a class about romance. And it was amazing, and it was my favorite class ever. And she also writes as Kara Elliott, and I adore her romances as Kara Elliott. And she's coming back to Mysteries, and I'm very excited for that, and I'm loving the first chapter.
That is called Murder on Black Swan Lane.
Yes, that sounds about right.
Thank you, Nicole.
I'm reading, I just started today, Laura Trentham's Kiss Me That Way, which is the first in her Cotton Bloom series, which is the name of the fictional town where they all live. And it's like a very sort of classic small town, boy from the wrong side of the tracks, girl from the rich family book. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm not very far in. And I'm also almost done with Flirting with Disaster by Victoria Dahl, which is about, they're both romance novels. It's about the heroine is on the run from the feds for reasons that we don't know yet, and is a sort of reclusive artist living in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and the guy is a U.S. Marshal who shows up there for a different reason. And then hijinks ensue.
Romantic hijinks.
I also just read, this is B, An Extraordinary Union by Alyssa Cole, which it's one of these romances that is gonna hit outside of the romance community. It is so richly, beautifully historical, and it's just amazing. I loved it, and I think people who have never read a romance, this would be an amazing first romance, because it's so, oh my god, like, heightened. It's so heightened.
Ooh, that's a good word. Wait, what was the title again?
An Extraordinary Union.
It comes right on March 28th.
It's nice. February 28th.
It's not. It's March 28th. It doesn't come out for a while.
So, and that's a POC narrative.
It is indeed.
What I just Googled.
Yes. It's a young woman posing as a slave, but she's a spy. She's
nice.
So
Is it written by a POC?
Yes, Alyssa Cole, who we adore. She's so cool. She lives in Martinique.
She's also like a What's supermodel.
Martinique, the like French island. And
oh.
I feel like we learned so much about geography on this.
I don't know where it is. It's in the Caribbean. But she's so glamorous and beautiful. And
yeah,
we're mildly obsessed with her.
That's amazing.
She's pretty cool.
Emma, what are you reading right now?
Sadly, no romance. I just finished Hot Dog Taste Test by Lisa Hannawalt. It is really hard to describe, so I'm just gonna say that it's a graphic essays and slash stories about food. It's random and weird and delicious.
Nice.
And I just started a graphic trade called Kim and Kim by Magdalene Visaggio.
I already love it.
It is basically punk rock bounty hunters in space.
I love it more now.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Really enjoying it. What about you, Kim?
In real talk, I've been having a lot of trouble reading since the inauguration. Kind of been forcing myself to read more about news stuff. So, that said, I did pick up Love is Love, which is a graphic anthology in response to the Orlando shooting. It's a really hard read, extraordinarily beautiful. I literally had trouble reading it both emotionally and physically because I was crying the entire time and couldn't see the page. But it is so important, and the proceeds for the book are benefiting the Orlando Pulse folk, and it's really incredible. Most of the sales so far have gone to staff, but we are now like putting it all over the place at the store.
Oh yeah,
I think it's really important. And then I actually just started Lydia Yuknovich, which if you've listened to this podcast at all, you've heard me say Lydia Yuknovich's name a lot. She's one of my favorite authors. She's based outside of Portland, and she has a new book coming out that is coming out in April of this year, so I'm going a little further out than normal. It is a futuristic space Joan of Arc story, again told with Lydia Yuknovich's signature literary style. It's extremely bodily, I guess, in its language, which is very much a Lydia thing, and is a little close to home on certain things. I'm actually kind of interested in hear what Lydia thinks of it, because I'm, you know, authors write books years in advance, and the leader of their spaceship is a media celebrity turned militant politician. So it's a little close to home.
I've never heard of that.
I know. Lydia is obviously a witch, and saw shit coming, and it's terrifying and wonderful and everything I hoped it would be. So April 18th of this year is when that's coming out. So I will probably talk about that for the next like 6 episodes. So
sure.
Fear not.
As you process your feelings.
Mm-hmm. I have lots of feels about Lydia all the time.
Speaking of forthcoming books, B and Leah, what are you guys looking forward to?
Well, obviously, Extraordinary Union, I think we've already decided it's going to be our book club book, and then whenever it comes out. Oh, yes. There's a series that I really like by Ainsley Booth and Sadie Haller about Canadian gentlemen. And
what was the profession of the first Canadian gentleman?
The first one is called Prime Minister, and it's like basically about if Justin Trudeau wasn't married and liked kinky sex. They're so funny. And the third one's coming out, which is called Full Mounty on April 4th. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, I'm excited for Julie Murphy's new book, Ramona Blue.
Mm-hmm. She wrote Dumplin'.
Which has been a big seller for us, and we love it. We love the cover. It's just such a great packaged book. So I'm very excited to see.
Yeah, it sounds really cute.
It does sound good.
Yeah, I'm excited about
what
that.
What she does with Ramona.
And then one of my favorite authors of all time, Julie James, has not had a book in quite some time. And her newest is coming out on April 18th. It's called The Thing About Love. And she'll be stopping by on her book tour, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, when is Julia Quinn's new book? Oh my gosh, wait, what am I talking about? The book I am most excited for, and I did not read an advanced copy. I am waiting until I can buy it on the day it comes out, is Lisa Claypaus's The Devil in Spring.
You know you don't have to buy it. You work it.
I mean, I'm going to take it out of our bookstore into my hot little hands.
You can just have it.
I'm just going to steal it. This is one of those series that, like, everyone in romance loves and is obsessed with, and it's called the Wallflower series. And the everyone's favorite, not my personal favorite, is Devil in Winter, because it has the villain from a former series redeemed as the hero. And then, like, their love story is pretty epic. This is their son's book, and he falls in love with a member of another family from another one of her series, who is a board game designer.
What?
Nice.
Which was a real thing in the Victorian times. Women and men, both. Board games became very popular. So I'm ridiculously excited for that.
That sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Emma, what are you looking forward to?
Small Bear Press is releasing a collection of short stories by Sophia Samatar, who wrote A Stranger in Alondria, which is a fantasy novel that I have been meaning to read since it came out. The short stories are called Tender, so that sounds amazing. I mean, I'll read basically anything that Small Bear Press puts out.
Why is that, Emma? I just want people to get their bingo slots filled in. I've got Lydia already, so.
Because it's Kelly Link's press, and she's amazing. The other book, so that comes out April 11th, and the other book I'm really looking forward to is called Next Year for Sure by Zoe Leigh Peterson. That comes out March 7th, and it is about a couple that has been monogamous for 9 years deciding to open up their relationship. And I've been trying to describe this. It's a pretty fast read, but, like, I feel like when people say, like, oh, this was, like, a fast read, that makes it seem less good. Like, it was a really good book, but it was, like, pretty light while also still being very emotional. Does that make sense?
Sure.
It's what one of my coworkers might call a popcorn book, but I mean that in the best way, because popcorn is delicious and I love it. Like, it's light, it's kind of fluffy, but it's also, like, it leaves you feeling very full. Yeah.
I like that description of popcorn.
Kind of wants a popcorn now.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Also, the main girl, well, I guess one of the main women, is a indexer. That's, like, she's a freelance indexer. And when she has sex with another person for, like, the first time in however many years, she does it by, like, creating an index. Like, that's how it's described. It's so good. Like, that really just hit my nerd buttons.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
That's great. So,
I'm sorry.
Your thing.
But are there any... So, I was thinking, and this might be wrong, but I feel like that is one of the few polyamorous stories that I've heard of in, like, mainstream fiction, but I'm guessing that you ladies at the Rip Bodice might have more polyamory recommendations.
Oh, we got tons.
A billion.
Yay.
Yeah, we got tons. One of my favorite writers who does a lot of polyamorous relationships is Lauren Dane. Laid Bare is a threesome book. In romance, they generally tend to be two guys and a girl, but not always. So I really like Lauren's. Maya Banks has a bunch of polyamorous relationships.
Isn't Alicia's?
Oh, yeah, that one's so good. Alicia Rye has this book called Glutton for Pleasure. Yeah. It's so good. And that one is two men and a woman. And the woman is the chef at an Indian restaurant, so the whole book is, like, just talking about Indian food. Yeah, that's one of my favorite. But yes, we do have lots of polyamorous relationships.
See, I knew that that was...
Yeah, it is interesting that the boundaries that romance is able to break way before it hits mainstream.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate quote that unquote, so much. Mainstream. Yeah, quote-unquote mainstream. But, like, the book you were just talking about is billed as, like, contemporary literary fiction, so...
It's just such an annoying...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the boundaries between genres are something I think, like, publishing industry people talk about a lot, and then readers are like, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we have what we call romance adjacent fiction in the store. So that's women's fiction, historical fiction, you know, books that we want to sell and that we read, but aren't traditional romance novels.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say there's a huge difference between some of them and some of the romance novels. It's like marketing and packaging more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Especially in historical.
Well, yeah, because I feel like so many romance novels are historical novels. Whenever anyone comes in looking for a historical novel, I'm like, I haven't read what you would consider a historical novel, but let me take you to the romance section.
Yeah.
I have some recommendations.
And you'll like them. Ignore the cover. They will have the same amount of history as a historical fiction novel. Probably more sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Kim, what about you?
There's a young adult book called The Hate You Give, you as in the letter, by Angie Thomas, which is a fictional account of essentially the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, and it has been getting all of the buzz, like all of it.
I really enjoyed it. I've already read it.
Someone stole the arc out of my hands.
So will you give a pitch?
No, your description was very good. I will say I went in expecting it to be sad, and it was sad, but it's also got some really funny moments. I laughed a lot.
That's great.
it is sad, but it's worth reading.
Nice. Yeah. I'm so excited for it, and I think it's a really important book for us to be selling and promoting right now in bookstores. So everybody go buy that. The other, the big poetry book, which is not a statement that gets said very often.
Unfortunately.
I know, right? Is a book that Grey Wolf is coming out with. You might know them as the folks who published Citizen by Claudia Rankine, and they have essentially Citizen for the Native American population coming out at the beginning of March, called Whereas by Lely Long Soldier. I say Citizen of the Native American population not so much content-wise, but I think importance-wise, what Citizen did for getting folks to read about the Black experience in America, the Black female experience in America, whereas we'll do for the Native American female experience in a really important way. So very, very, very timely, and I think something that will, again, within the context of genres, not really hitting the mainstream to a certain extent. Poetry has like definitely a niche, and Citizen transcended that, and I think Whereas will as well. And then we got a couple of really awesome heavy hitters coming out in March as well, all on the same day, actually, March 7th. Rebecca Solnit of Men Explain Things to Me, and most recently gaining popularity, Hope in the Dark, has a book coming out on March 7th called The Mother of All Questions, which is going to be amazing. And then Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie has a book coming out as well. She wrote Americana and We Should All Be Feminists. She has a book coming out as well, which is, I am going to fuck up the title so hard, Dear Ija Wele, or A Feminist Manifesto in 15 Suggestions, which is, she got a letter from a friend of hers about how to raise her child as a feminist, and Adichie responded in this series of letters about raising girls in a feminist environment and how to make them empowered in a world that is generally not empowering for young Black women in particular. So really excited. Again, a very short book, small format, so should be very accessible, and it's just gonna like blow off the shelves. So March 7th is your day to get all of the voices.
Yay.
So go do that.
Good list. Right.
Yeah.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So, B and Leah, we normally start off kind of asking about a bookseller origin story, but I'm especially curious about what books first got you into romance specifically.
So, this is B, and I'm the older sister, so I start the origin story.
As you should.
Yes, of course. I read historical fiction. I loved princesses, and that led kind of seamlessly into historical romance, as I think it does for many people. We were raised in a household of readers that we spent many Sundays at the bookstore, and there was no censorship of what we read. We could read whatever we wanted, whenever we wanted, except when we were supposed to be sleeping, and I got caught all the time. But we had to, you know, justify why we wanted to read it. So I was always telling my mom that I loved the historical fashion, and I ended up getting my graduate degree in that, which is really funny to me.
Right, in historical fashion?
Yes, historical fashion design. But my family always teased me for my books with the ladies on the covers. Because, you know, many historical novels have bosoms on their covers. So Leah, which one was the first one I gave you, do you think?
Oh God, I have no idea. I don't know.
It was probably a Bridgerton.
And I pretty quickly moved from historical romance to contemporary romance. I don't find history to be quite as sexy as Bea does. And Nora Roberts was really the person who turned me into a hardcore romance reader. Just the notion that you could read one of her books and then go into the backlist and read like 98 more. Yeah. And she has so many wonderful series. The Bridal Quartet series is my favorite of hers. And a couple other early ones were Julie James, who I mentioned earlier, and Susan Elizabeth Phillips, who both write books about Chicago that take place in Chicago, where we're from. And mm-hmm. I loved those. I loved reading books that took place where I lived.
Gosh, we were really different in that. I hadn't really focused on that.
Yes, we are different people.
Oh, but I wanted to read like about like a time period and as far away from where we were as possible. And you wanted to read about Chicago.
I'm sorry to inform you that we are not the same person. I know it's shocking.
Probably for the best.
It is.
What percentage of the books that you guys are currently reading are romance, or categorized as romance books?
For me, I'd say it's probably about 95%. I usually read about one non-romance a month. So I read 12 non-romance a month.
I mean, that's more than a lot of people read, so.
Oh my god, I was freaking out. Some study came out a while ago. The average American reads, I think it is 12 books a year. Might be lower, but it's like
I think
not.
It was actually lower than that, yeah.
Maybe 7. It's not higher than 12.
Yeah.
Anyway, B.
I read a lot of everything. So I would say I'm usually reading 80% romance. Yeah. Maybe a little less.
Now, is that because that's what you were reading before you guys opened the store, or is that also, like, partially work reading?
I mean, I think it's still, maybe I went from two non-romances a month to one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's changed my habits that much.
My non-romance is usually for research purposes. And I go on a kick and read all about whatever it is. And I also read a lot of, like, biographies and history books. I've always loved history, so.
So is that research for pleasure, or?
It is for the book that I will one day write.
Nice. Which when is she's not running.
When I'm not running a bookstore.
in all that free time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love the research part of writing, so I spend a lot of time on it.
So you mentioned, what was that title that you said you gave to anyone who is new to romance? Brighton?
It's the Bridgertons. It's a series of 8 books, and then there's 2, I believe, fully complete books of just second epilogues. Because everyone loved these people so much and wanted to know what was happening that she made a book where it was just like a short story about each of them where we could check in and see how happy they were. It's a crazy popular series. It's like this family, and it's 8 siblings, and they all love each other, but, you know, they're real siblings. Like, one of them annoys the other one, and one of them is the tattletale, and one of them is the older brother who's really bossy. So they each have their own little quirks, and they show up in each other's books. So that's one of my main suggestions, especially if people are really looking to, like, kind of test the waters of Regency. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's so light and funny while also having all this amazing detail to it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
What do you recommend to somebody who wants contemporary?
As a starting place? In contemporary, it mainly depends on what level of heat you're looking for, because I don't
know.
Are
there names for those levels of heat?
My own personal names. I mean, I ask people, I'm like, do you want something that's like super graphic and dirty, or would you prefer something that's like a little bit more cloaked in metaphor? and, you know, they're like, it's, like, Nora Roberts' sex scenes, I always say, are very cloaked in metaphor. She's, like, always talking about freaking floating on gossamer wings. No one is going to be like, you know, you're not going to see the word cock. So if you're looking for something maybe on the not quite as dirty end of the spectrum, Nora Roberts is a great place to start. Susan Elizabeth Phillips. It's the one with the boobs on the cover.
As
her
opposed
Chicago
to
star. It's like a picture. It's literally a picture of her boobs.
Oh, it is. It's her bra with a whistle.
Yeah, because she's it owns a football team. I can't remember what it's called. The first Chicago Stars book. It's really good.
I've recently been starting because like a lot of people come into the store and they're like, oh, I like Star Wars or more like geek fandom stuff, and then I give them Heroine Complex by Sarah Kuhn, which is an Asian American superheroine romance, and it is
nice,
delightful.
They're super fun. The Beautiful series by Christina Lauren is always one of my favorites. That's now we're on the really dirty end of the spectrum. They're really dirty. But they're so good, and it's similar to the Bridgertons and historical in that it's a long series where you get very invested in the people, and they're all, like, related and connected to each other. So it's a good introduction to the sort of joy of a romance series.
Nice.
I'm a pretty big Buffy fan.
Vampire Romance, J.R. Ward has this great, super long-running series that is crazy dirty.
Those are so
they're, like, really, really dirty. They also involve, like, an incredibly complex dictionary and world that she has created.
If you want, like, the funnier side of vampires, I really like Molly Harper.
Okay.
What's the first word?
Nice girls don't bite their neighbors.
No, I read Karen Feeding of a Stray Vampire.
Oh, that's good too. Those are two different series.
She has two different series. But what I love about it is sometimes with paranormal, for me, the world building gets to be too complicated and confusing. So in Molly's books, we're in the real world.
Talk about Dick Cheney.
Okay, I'm getting to Dick Cheney. You spoiled the Dick Cheney.
Sorry.
So there's real people who have been turned into vampires.
Like Dick Cheney,
who's like this background character who's dating one of the main girl's friends.
Wait, what? Dick Cheney's dating?
Yes! He's like involved with one of them.
Is he
evil? I don't know.
But is he evil?
No, he's not evil. He's a vampire.
But he's evil.
Well, in real life.
Yeah.
Not in this world.
Okay. Anyway.
Anyway, Dick Cheney's hanging out in the background.
I love this conversation. This is amazing.
It's pretty funny.
What about the witch being side of Buffy?
Oh my god, we love witches.
Witches are...
They're our shit.
Well, okay, so this isn't, like, exactly it, but it's close. Rebecca Weatherspoon has a lesbian vampire sorority series.
What?
I'm in.
Where they're all in the sorority, and they're all lesbians, and they're all vampires. the first one is called Better Off Red, and they are so... Super
red, as in R-E-A-D or R-E-D?
No, R-E-D, like blood.
Okay, got it. I was gonna be really excited, and now I'm still just extremely excited.
No, I'm sorry. Red, like the color. Yeah, they're so funny. And who else has got? Well, my favorite witch series.
We have different favorite Nora Roberts witch series.
She does awesome witches. There's two different series. One is called Three Sisters Island, and one is Cousins O'Dwyer, which takes place in Ireland. They're both great. Yeah, her witches are cool.
I think we both really like witch paranormals because they tend to be very feminist.
Yeah.
They're like all about sisterhood and like
feminism.
Connecting with your
bringing
earth
power
mother
to
or
you.
Whatever.
Yeah. We enjoy it. We live in LA.
Wait, have either of you read the Alison Moon Lunatic Fringe book?
No,
that sounds so familiar to me.
So we brought in a few of her books. She does a kind of graphic, by which I mean graphic novelish, guide to called Girl Sex 101. That's like super queer positive and like really amazing, and kind of like the perfect book that I wish I had.
We're googling. We're getting it.
What's her name?
Alison Moon with two L's. But she has a fucking, like, werewolf lesbian series.
Cool.
The basic premise, from what I understand, we just got the copies in, and we only got a couple, so I wasn't allowed to, like, steal it from the store immediately. This, like, ingenue, like, freshman shows up at college and falls in with, like, a pack of radical feminist werewolf hunters.
Cool.
And, you know, romance and such ensue.
It's showing up in Also Bots with a book that we love and sell the shit out of called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski.
Wait, the Girl Sex 101 is? Or?
Yes, it's like compared to People Also Bought.
Yeah, which has the great cover. So I actually had a series of photos I was taking for the store where I wanted to make this GIF of all the vaginal-looking covers. Mostly of literary fiction, because, like, there's a lot of them. Like, have you seen the cover for Tampa by Alyssa Nutting?
No.
Go Google that real quick.
Oh! Wow! That's just a vagina.
I'm just saying, guys,
it's a buttonhole.
It's a buttonhole on a shirt. That's all it is.
But it's pink.
Bring your minds back out of the gutter. Come on.
No, that's where they permanently reside.
It's a very vaginal cover.
It's so good.
I like it.
Anyway, I was taking pictures of a bunch of those. So, listeners, if you have your favorite vaginal-looking cover, send it along, and we'll make a nice GIF out of it.
Amazing.
Yes, please.
Yep. Anyway, Allison Moon, werewolf, lesbian, feminist. That's all I got.
That's more than enough.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, we can go on. Maybe non-paranormal. For queer and diverse romance, do you have particular suggestions that you would give to people?
Yes. Well, we just mentioned Rebecca Weatherspoon, who does the lesbian vampires. She also has non-vampire lesbians.
Yes.
Many of whom are people of color as well, as she is. In the male-male side of things, Alexis Hall writes gorgeous, gorgeous books. I love his work. His most recent is called For Real. It's so, so good. Damon Swade is another great gay writer. His books are, like, super hot, and they're frequently about firemen.
Nice.
And, oh, if you're looking for something different, Eric Shaw Quinn wrote this book called The Prince's Psalm, which is a biblical gay romance.
Wait, what does that entail? The cradle Catholic in me is curious.
I actually don't know that much about it. I just know that the internet crazies went insane, so that means it's good.
Nice. Amazing.
And he lives in LA and has been in a couple times. He's a very entertaining guy. Okay, back to lesbians. Not that long ago read Melissa Braden's First Position, which is about ballerinas, which I was into.
Nice.
And enjoyed. There's some great YA titles as well. If you haven't read, what's the Janet Nelson one I love? I'll Give You the Sun. It's fantastic. And, pretty recent, I can't remember when exactly it came out, Georgia Peaches and Other Forbidden Fruit by J. Robin Brown is about a lesbian girl who's the daughter of an evangelical minister in, like, the deep South. And it was really good, and I want to airmail it to all Southern children.
That sounds great.
On the historical side of things, I love Cat Sebastian's The Soldier's Scoundrel, which is a gay Regency, and it's really good. And I also love K.J. Charles, who also writes gay Regencies, that are a little less high class, a little more, like, kind of going throughout social...
Like, they're not all dukes.
They're not all dukes, is what I'm trying to say, in a very convoluted way. Yeah, like, nice. Covering the social strata. They're very interesting and good.
Jen LeBlanc also has a really good gay Victorian called The Spare and the Heir.
Oh, yeah.
And
she did she's a photographer, and she did illustrated versions, which have, like, these beautiful photographs.
Of just, like, the hottest guys you've ever seen.
Yeah.
like, mostly naked.
Nice.
They're pretty excellent.
Yeah. We had a signing with them in the store, and Leonard was just like, okay.
Like, the models from the thing came, and I was like, you are the most beautiful person I've ever seen.
Amazing.
The one guy's really long hair, and I was just like, you're really and if you're looking for romance across all genres that have people of color as heroes or heroines. We already mentioned Alicia Rye. Definitely check out Glutton for Pleasure. Courtney Milan is one of my absolute favorite writers, and she has this phenomenal contemporary series. The first one's called Trade Me.
She also writes historicals that are fucking fantabulous.
Yeah, she's
the Countess Conspiracy.
Beverly Jenkins writes
all-time fave,
the best books you've ever read, and they are mostly about African-American... She does African-American historicals, generally post, like, Civil War era, but she kind of writes all over the place, whatever she's feeling at the moment, but all her books are amazing, and...
Breathless is the newest release.
Yeah.
We also, Alyssa Cole and Piper Hughley and a bunch of other African-American historical writers produced an anthology that is so incredible. It's called Daughters of a Nation. It's about black suffragettes. And the stories are just, like, really beautiful. It's, they're all so different, which I loved. And but it also goes together really well as an anthology, which I think is kind of difficult. I don't know. It's fabulous. Yeah. Definitely check it out.
Jeannie Lin does ancient Chinese Tang Dynasty romances that are very, like, dramatic.
Yeah.
A lot of things happen.
If you like the Netflix show Marco Polo, like, this is an even better version of that.
There's, like, a lot of, I don't know, stuff.
Sword fighting.
Intrigue and sword fighting. Like one of them is called Silk Swords and Surrender.
Nice.
And that is an accurate description of what it is about.
I love romance titles.
It's fun.
Yeah, no, you guys have the best titles.
That we do. 100% true. Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack.
That shit crack. That shit crack. I want to transition into talking about your store, which we've obviously referenced. You guys are fairly new. You opened in March of last year, so you're about to hit your one-year anniversary.
Indeed.
Happy one-year anniversary.
Yeah. Thank you.
March 4th, 2016.
Knock on wood.
Tell us about your store a little bit and what made you decide to open a bookstore dedicated solely to romance.
Well, excluding your lovely store and some other lovely indies, it's not easy being a romance reader in a bookstore world.
Yeah.
People tend to be dismissive, which is the least of our problems. We've been laughed at. We've been sexually harassed. We've been all kinds of things when we ask for romance in bookstores. So we really wanted to make a safe space where people could really, like, talk about the crazy titles and the covers and everything and just have fun with it and, like, enjoy themselves.
And it's really that it's so hard to have fun with it and take it seriously at the same time.
Yes, it is so fun.
And out in the rest of the world, it feels like you have to do one or the other. So for us, it's really nice that we can laugh about the crazy titles but also take the work seriously.
Yeah.
Those things can absolutely coexist side by side. And it frankly just struck us as unfair that there are how many comic book stores in the United States and mystery bookstores and science fiction bookstores. Somebody opened a cookbook store in Chicago.
Multiple cookbook stores.
We've got one of those
stores.
In Seattle.
Yeah, there's one.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Do you want to compare the selling numbers of romance and cookbooks? Because I'm guessing they're not that close to each other. Romance is the best-selling genre in the world, and there wasn't a single bookstore devoted to it in the United States.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and you guys have such a huge, like, community, too. Like, you guys have fucking romance writers conferences.
Yeah, we do.
Readers conferences. Like this is a huge community.
There's conferences for readers. There's conferences for writers. There's conferences for both. There's a whole industry around romance. There are magazines specifically for romance readers. There are convention.
Tons of great blogs.
Blogs, podcasts. We have created our own world as the larger literary community has kind of not paid attention. So we're kind of straddling that line of, being both in the bookstore community and the romance community and being respectful of both of those worlds.
Yeah. I feel like the rise of romance as, like, a legitimate, quote-unquote, legitimate genre in bookselling, like, this has been something that we aren't allowed to talk about for the most part, and like the fact that we're able to have like these really strong community oriented spaces around something that has been like taboo for so long, and that seems to kind of like get to the, I don't know, to the problem with the genreization and like the issues that we've had with allowing like sexuality out in the open.
Well, sure,
we come up against that all the, I mean, people want us to be embarrassed. That, like, yeah. Sometimes men, let's be honest, will come into our bookstore and demand that we account for being there, that we account for taking up space and for the, and justify why we deserve this.
Oh, fuck that.
It's crazy, but it happens all the time. And now I kind of laugh at them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I honestly feel bad for you that you're, like, so unengaged that you can't acknowledge that, like, women might want a space where they can, like, talk about their sexuality safely.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's their reasoning for being here?
Oh, my God. Lord, give me the confidence of a middle-aged I mean, Lord.
So this is my transition point into 50 Shades, but, like, we, I think, had, like, kind of a cultural awakening when 50 Shades became a huge deal. That all of a sudden we're allowed to kind of talk about sexuality within the context of, like, women and our reading habits. And yet, if I remember correctly, you guys don't actually carry 50 Shades.
We don't. So that awakening happened to the outside world, but not to the, you know, the romance world is already here. That is not a full representation of what this genre is.
Right. So it's like the problem, you never want to be represented by one singular thing that you had no control over. Before we go any further, you know, the whole point of our bookstore is not to judge anyone for what they read.
Yeah.
So it gets tricky when we try to discuss this because we have reasons for not carrying it, but we also don't want to judge other people for reading and enjoying it. Like, that's totally fine.
Absolutely.
Our job is to curate a selection, and it didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has real significant problems, and I think it would be different if a lot of things were different, but just the way that things sort of shook out, that a lot of people were using this as an introduction to BDSM doesn't really work because it's not a good representation of what BDSM is.
Yeah.
So if that hadn't been a factor, you know, maybe things would be different, but, you know, so many people who came to it, that was their first experience with BDSM, and I feel, this is certainly a personal opinion, that it's a very inaccurate representation of that world.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of people coming in asking for that, or at this point, like, when somebody comes into a romance store, I'm assuming they're beyond...
Yeah, I mean...
Or they're not just looking for 50 Shades.
No, no. A lot of people... Some people, you know, say, I read it, I enjoyed it, what else can you recommend? And, you know, I'm always happy to... And it's really interesting when you ask people why they liked it, because there's, like, 100 answers. Yeah. There's, like, some people are like, oh, I liked the kinky sex, but most people are like, I liked that he was a billionaire, I liked that it took place in Seattle, I liked that, you know...
For a lot of people, it was the first time they were reading a story that ostensibly centered a woman's pleasure. Do I agree that 50 Shades does that super well? No. But it is a book about a relationship, and it was the first time a lot of women were picking up a book about a relationship in a long time.
Yeah.
We want people to read, and that's such a valuable thing, enjoying a book. So if you enjoyed 50 Shades, amazing. We have so much more like that. We have so much more different. But we don't, personally.
The way you guys talk about the hand selling after the fact, I think, is really important. And that's the community building that you guys are doing, so.
Yeah, I mean, it you know, it's difficult. It's, you never want to turn people off from a genre.
Yeah.
by talking badly about a book, so it's a line we tread.
Yeah.
Your store is gorgeous, by the way. I was
looking at pictures.
It just seems like a very fancy, lingerie dressing room.
That, yeah. That's definitely
totally
the vibe
what we're going for.
It doesn't so much look like a bookstore. It's a little more spread out than most bookstores.
Can you tell us a little more about the space? Like, do you guys, do you carry sidelines? Like, or like non-book items?
We do.
So, go online and look at pictures, but basically, the store is split into four major sort of zones, historical, contemporary, paranormal, and erotica. I guess actually five, because number five is and everything else.
adjacent stuff.
And each one of those zones is really decorated to reflect the genre. So the historical section is in the front, and that's also where our Victorian sitting room is.
Nice.
Where you can sit and, you know, enjoy your purchases.
There's is there a fainting couch?
The fainting couch is in the front window.
Okay.
Yes,
nice.
There is a fainting couch.
We went all the way to Utah to get
it. We bought it in Utah.
Of course Utah would have a fainting couch.
Of course they would.
That just seems like a thing they'd have.
Cool. Yeah, so that's in the front window. And then we have some really gorgeous vintage couches and chairs. We do carry quite a lot of sideline. Our main, I would say the main things we have tons of candles.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Candles, jewelry, art prints,
bath products,
notebooks, and cards. We have 4 million cards, as I'm sure you guys do.
Uh-huh.
We were doing a bang up business in, oh crap, it's Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But you know what we did a bang-up business in today, the day after Valentine's? This is hilarious. We have a card from Emily McDowell, who I'm sure you guys are familiar with. We love her. That says, "Sorry, I'm a shitty boyfriend." And honestly, back-to-back, two dudes came in to buy it today, and it was like they like smiled at each other at the register. It was like this like bro code thing. It was very funny. And when that shit never happens in our store. You know,
amazing.
But it was pretty funny.
Yeah. And a lot of our sideline tends to be book themed. You know, book lockets, book art prints about books. But it's also about, you know, really trying to tap into other things romance readers like. Like feminism.
Yes.
And not liking President Cheeto.
Yes. Our favorite new thing we have is from the amazing minds behind Juniper and Ivy, which is these little like laser cut wooden bookmarks and jewelry. And it tends to be kind of like nerdy themed stuff. They introduced a whole new line called Human is Human. And it is all anti-Cheeto.
It's like magnets and pins and bookmarks that say such things as, "We're in tiny hands now.
We shall overcomb."
Uh-huh.
And then there's like funny things and then there's serious things.
Because a part of being a romance bookstore is being unapologetically feminist and sex positive.
Yeah.
And we feel those two things are incompatible with our supporting our current administration. So we are extremely political. We do not apologize for it. We don't particularly care if we lose customers. It's so important that women have ownership over their bodies, and that's what we're here for. You can have ownership over what you read. You can have ownership over your decisions. All those things matter.
Read so hard, libraries can't find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So we like to ask contributors what their Desert Island / Station 11 / Wild book and or books are. So basically, Desert Island, what book would you take with you if you had to live on a desert island? Station 11, what book would you carry with you after an apocalyptic event? And Wild, what book would you bring with you on an epic journey and maybe or maybe not burn?
Yes, I love this, especially because Station 11 is one of my favorite books.
Yeah, we both love Station 11.
It's so good, and that's such a good.
I also have such a good Station 11 book.
Okay.
I'm
such
a nerd.
You can go first.
Okay, so my Desert Island book is...
Wait, we have to think about, like, the different criteria
different
places.
So my Station 11 book would be Robert's Rules of Order.
What?
Because we'd have to rebuild society, yo.
Are you serious?
And also, I love Robert's Rules of Order.
You're so lame.
I'm so lame. I was the parliamentarian of our high school. Like, I've read Robert's Rules front to back
You're love that book.
So lame.
I am a lunatic. Fully admit.
I am so happy with that answer. That is the like nerdiest fucking answer, and I really appreciate it.
Wait, and also it's so practical. Like by that logic, I should bring what's that?
Okay,
book the like. I should. Bring, I would like, a only survival
be,
guy.
Wait. Here's the thing, though. I would only be practical in a post Station 11 situation on a desert island. I am done for. I'm gonna get that. Like it's pure pleasure. So I would bring a pure pleasure book. Station 11. Maybe there's like other people around. Like maybe someone can help me out. Like figure out post apocalypse survival.
Oh my god. Okay. That's wait. Legit. All right. So Station 11. You're bringing Robert's Rules of Order. I guess I'm bringing. Well, I see. I don't know if I should go practical. Like bring a freaking like guide to how to eat poison. Not eat poisonous mushrooms.
Oh, what was that book Jacob just got?
Which we've had that before. Like
how right. Yeah. Our brother got. Yeah. A book for Hanukkah that was like a crazy survival guide.
Yeah, like a doomsday prepper guide.
I mean, I don't know, like...
No, go pleasure. You pick whatever you want.
Okay, well, what about... I'm trying to think of the most practical...
trying to think of the ways around I'm this challenge. I'm trying
to think of the most practical ones to bring. I don't know.
We give you guys a lot of options.
I don't, I'll come back to Desert Island. I'll come back to Station 11. Okay, Desert Island, I'm bringing, I think, Nora Roberts. I think I'm...
Which one?
What
would be your one?
I guess... Well, it's like the most straightforwardly named romance novel ever. Like, the last book in that series I talked about early is called Happy Ever After. And I think if I'm... on the desert island, that's...
You want to be happy.
What I'm reading.
Yeah.
Be happy.
Okay, what are you bringing to the desert island?
I think to the desert island, I would bring A Week to Be Wicked by Tessa Dare.
Yeah.
Because it's funny, and it's sexy, and I just love that book so much. I could reread it a billion times.
Okay, and then on our wild adventure, which we did the tiny lazy person's version of. We have...
Oh, yeah.
Two summers ago, we walked across England. I feel like on, like, a grand epic adventure, I might bring, like, one of my favorite books from childhood or teenage years.
Oh, it's, interesting.
Like, very misty. Because you're supposed to be, you know, searching for yourself or whatever. So...
Oh, right.
It might help you with your search.
Honestly, I think like this, I already sound crazy in this whole podcast, but I would bring one of Allison Weir's like crazy Tudor histories.
Great.
That's what I would bring.
I would bring.
I'm sticking with it.
Great. Oh, you know what I'm going to bring? I'm going to bring, Mixed Up Files of Miss Bassett.
Oh, that's a great book.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Cause they're on an adventure too. And then we're like on an adventure together.
Yeah.
And I still didn't pick my Station 11 book. I'm going with like the most comprehensive survival guide I can find. It's lame, but it's practical. That's legit. What about like a car maintenance manual or something?
I don't know that we'll be able to use cars.
Yeah, what's the situation with cars?
I guess that's true.
Well, I would bring the entire recording of Click and Clack from
NPR.
NPR?
That's not a book.
No, but I just want to hear their adorable voices. They still play them on Saturday morning. It makes me so happy.
Okay. We've made our decisions.
We tried to do different ones.
Yeah. Can we share with each other?
Yeah, we can share.
Okay, what is your bookseller confession?
Oh,
well, the thing people always say is like, oh, I'm gonna shock you.
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
Yes, I think that's
I'm not
good.
Shocked. Like, the confession
is your like tawdry thing that you think is like super scandalous is really,
really
boring.
Really normal.
Actually, this was a question I had earlier. You talked about things being really dirty. What is the dirtiest romance novel you've read?
It's a tie. There's a couple.
What are the ones that stick out?
It's Olivia Cunning's Rockstar series. They're like rock stars having ridiculous amounts of sex. And then those J.R. Ward crazy vampire ones.
Okay. Those are some of the dirtiest I think I've
read. I don't tend to read very dirty romance. Because I read more historical, there's just not as much.
But I'm also, at this point, a terrible judge because, like, nothing is dirty to me. Like,
what?
I'm, like, handing you stuff as a crazy graphic, and I'm like, oh, it's super tame.
We've become desensitized a bit.
Yes. Yeah, so bookseller confession, if you think you're saying something scandalous, you're not.
So, we've talked about your go-to hand sells for folks who are new to the genre. What are your impossible hand sells? Like, what are the books that you want to be able to hand sell to somebody, but, like, just can't?
Okay, so this is a real problem in romance for a specific reason, and it's also why outing specific titles is going to be a little difficult. So, there's a lot of self-pubbed romance, and we sell quite a bit of it. Some of those self-published titles have the most god-awful covers you've ever seen. Uh-huh. It's, like, embarrassing. And people don't want to buy an unprofessional-looking book. So a lot of times that happens because the book was originally, and the author was thinking about selling it online and didn't really think about what the finished product would really look like.
And that's really been, you know, something that's evolved over the past year is we're much more selective. And now that we know what sells, like, if we know if we can't sell your book because of the way it looks. And so that's one thing. I also, you know, it's interesting because I think people are very used to, or at least come into the store and are less embarrassed about buying the romance fiction, but are more embarrassed about buying nonfiction.
Yeah.
Because we have, like, a couple of really great books about how to practice kink in BDSM safely, and, like, sort of, like, you know, if these books appeal to you, like, you might actually want to try it out in real life, like, maybe you should read this.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get people to buy that stuff.
And yeah, like, and people are, like, backing away.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't actually want to do it. It's like, you do you, boo.
Yeah.
Go for it. Enjoy. And, the like, playing well with others is come as you are. Like, these books, they can teach you so much. And you could be such a more sexually fulfilled person. If you read a little bit about your own sexuality, some people are so scared to delve into that, which is sad. It's like, you don't even know what you're missing, yo.
I frequently try to get men who are buying presents
always
to buy nonfiction stuff, and they're like,
yeah, no. That's serious. Some people, like, run out of the store away from us. We're like, buy it.
What about a book that you would like to champion to other booksellers? Like, the number one romance that you think all booksellers should be hand selling?
Well, I do think the Daughters of a Nation anthology is really important, and also just, like, will appeal to non-romance readers. It doesn't look like a romance. It looks much more historical fiction, and it's so awesome.
That's a very good choice. I would say I would go with Beyond Heaving Bosoms by Sarah Wendell and Candy Tan, which is about a nonfiction book about romance novels.
But it's also really funny, so it's, like, really easy to read.
It's not academic at all. It's, like, super hilarious. It's got, like, really funny illustrations in it. And it's really good.
I would also like to encourage other... I mean, I love Regency historicals. That is my bread and butter, but... it's part of kind of, like, what turns some people off from romance. Like, they don't really want to read about that stuff. So I would just encourage other booksellers to have more than one romance novel, more than two romance novels, and more than two Nora Roberts titles.
Let's say, like, 25. That's, like, two shelves.
I would so encourage booksellers to not laugh at their customers.
Yeah.
It's like, so number damaging one to a young woman when she comes in and is trying to buy books and you're laughing at her. It's just...
Oh, or not, or more likely, sneering.
Yeah, if people are reading, you know, more power to them.
So do you guys have a favorite bookstore other than your own?
Like a lot.
Yeah, oh my god.
I guess in Los Angeles. Oh god, there's like, I don't even know in Los Angeles. I guess in Los Angeles I would go with Diesel Books. In yeah. Brentwood. They just have. I just think that their selection is, it's so small and they just have such a great selection. In our hometown of Chicago, it's Women and Children First.
Nice.
Where we grew up and just love and went all the time. And in soon to be coming bookstores, we're really rooting for the Queens Bookshop in Queens, New York, which also kickstarted and has been looking for a space for a while, and Books Are Magic in Brooklyn. It's very fun now that we're open to like watch other stores open.
My favorite bookstore in all the land is Persephone Books in London. It is the coolest. What they do is reprint basically forgotten female texts from the 19th and 20th centuries.
Fuck yes.
Books that did not get any kind of attention in their time. And they print them in these beautiful cloth-bound editions. Like, their books are just the most amazing gift to give because there's so much thought in each book. And the space is so lovely. I love it. Oh, and I also love Shakespeare and Co. in Paris. I want to live in Europe, basically. but I spent many a summer day when I was a teenager in Shakespeare and Co. in Paris. And
nice.
Bugging all of the rare books people.
What about favorite literary media? Podcasts, bookish websites, lit mags, things romance lovers should follow?
Yeah, it's the blog and podcast are the same answer. It's Smart Bitches, Trashy Books.
Yeah. We like them.
Blog is fantastic. I believe the podcast is called Smart Podcast Trashy Books or something like that. Absolutely one-stop shop for all your romance needs.
And for all your life needs. Sarah is just like, she knows everything that's good.
She's
one of those people who like, her recommendation is gold across the board.
And her whole contributing staff, like, one of them watches The Bachelor and, like, loves knitting. And the other one's, like, super into cooking. And they, like, post about all this other fun stuff.
We love her.
And
we love Book Riot.
Book Riot is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Girls at Library does very cool interviews with bookish women. The other blog I read every day is Heroes and Heartbreakers, which is really good. It's much more like new releases and like upcoming things, and so I don't miss anything.
There's also very active romance Twitter.
Yes. Follow all your favorite authors on Twitter.
Follow all your favorite authors on Twitter. They're lots of fun, and they do lots of giveaways, and they talk to each other. It's cute. It's fun.
Yeah.
I love that book Twitter is a thing, and then romance book Twitter
is like even better
a
thing.
Whole
it's a
separate,
totally separate,
more
thing.
Engaged thing.
I mean,
it's
we
great.
Like follow some book people, we follow some YA people, but it's mostly romance for us, and
that's
they
amazing.
Are really funny.
So, where can you guys be found on the internets?
I got so many places.
We
are The Ripped Bodice on Twitter and Instagram,
but more importantly, we are at Fitzwilliam Waffles, who is our dog.
That's our dog. He has his own Instagram, which he posts on very frequently. At
yes,
Fitzwilliam
like
Waffles.
Today, we are wearing matching red cable knit sweaters.
Yeah, it was
winning.
Truly
because we've lost our minds, have we not?
Our website is www.therippedbodicela.com. And is there anything else? I think that's it. Website, Twitter, Instagram. You can just Google the Ripped Bodice. You'll find us.
Everything's
Google's
on our website.
Pretty easy.
We have
that.
A newsletter, too. Which
oh,
is,
yeah.
It's got our events, but it's also got, like, recommendations and something called Fitzwilliam's Corner.
Awesome. Yeah, Fitz likes to write the newsletter sometimes. He just likes to share his thoughts with the world.
It's and, fun.
You can sign up on our website.
Okay. We're going to let you guys go. B and Leah, thank you.
Yeah, this
so
was
much
delightful
for everything.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a delight,
a pleasure
chatting and drinking with you.
Yes, indeed.
Yay.
I'm going to have so many romance books to buy and take out from the library now.
Yay! Oh yeah, libraries are an amazing place to find romance.
Hell yeah!
What's up? Like, mm-hmm. They have so much, and librarians frequently know a lot about. Hit up your library for some romance.
Oh yeah,
guys, libraries are
the
best.
They are the best.
Yeah,
like I mean, other than bookstores, libraries are the best.
Yeah. Any room full of books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find us on the internets at Drunk Booksellers, except on Twitter, where we're just Drunk Bookseller, singular. We're on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. As mentioned earlier, you can also subscribe and receive our show notes directly to your inbox when a new episode lands. Go to any of our social media pages for a link to subscribe. You can also email us at drunkbooksellers@gmail.com if you have something to say. And you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcatcher app you use. And if you like the show and want to help us out, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. It's a totally free way for you to support the show and get us into the ears of more listeners.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't want to forget this page. I've got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page.
Page.